from Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston. Welcome to Inside Wentworth.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside Wentworth, the podcast series that highlights the many exciting things happening at Wentworth Institute of Technology. In the broadest sense, the series showcases the real stuff of higher education, the important courses, programs, people, trends, and events that sometimes don't get covered by mainstream media. You can learn more about the series and access previous episodes by going to wit.edu/inside-wentworth-podcasts. My name is Dennis Dielen, and I'm the Director of Public and Media Relations in the Office of Communications at Wentworth. Our guest today is John Vosio, Assistant Professor in the Department of Mechanical Engineering and Technology, and Professor Vosio is here to discuss a special partnership between Wentworth and the Perkins School for the Blind, which is the oldest school for the blind in the United States. Together with other students and faculty members, Professor Vosio is leading a project to update the Perkins Brailler, a popular typewriter for the blind that has changed little since its manufacturing debut 67 years ago. Welcome, Professor Vosio.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let's begin, if we can, with an overview from you about the special collaboration with the Perkins School, and specifically go through how this project started and what are some of the main goals that you hope to accomplish in the project.
Okay, sure. Yeah, the project started approximately, really, well, 3 years ago, and it turned out Dan Roy, who leads Perkins Products at the School for the Blind, I worked with him in a previous company. He led the manufacturing of a superconducting wire at that time, and now he leads the manufacturing group for Perkins, and his primary responsibility is manufacturing the Brailler. So he reached out to me a few years ago, even before he knew I was a professor, and asked, John, do you know any schools in the Boston area interested in helping us update the Perkins Brailler? And I told him, oh, I just started at Wentworth, and so we're definitely interested. So that was the start of the collaboration. So that first year, we just floated the idea kind of open-endedly to some freshmen, just to, because they're looking for design project ideas, and they came up with a lot of innovative ideas on how you could possibly change the Brailler. And Dan was impressed with that. He hired a student that next summer, and that led, and that student mostly worked on documenting the Brailler and looking at a few, mostly trying to help them lower the cost of some key parts that were giving them trouble. So that the next year, then that led to a what's called an EPIC project the following year, where we had a more concerted effort to look at what's the main challenge with the Brailler. So that next year we had one co-op student in particular, Joseph Sneeweis, and he spent a lot of time just getting familiar with with the main issues of the Brailler, which primarily is the tolerance, the parts tolerance of the different parts. So he spent a lot of time working with the repair guys and finding out, and the guys that tune the Brailers to find out the challenges of the design. So that familiarized us with the main issues, and we started to hone in on the main issue was the so-called print head, the way it was designed. It had a lot of what's called tolerance stack up, to use a mechanical engineering word. So we looked to take a lot of that out. And so since then, we've had other co-op students go there last year. And we have redesigned the print head. We have a working prototype. And this upcoming year, we, with some second phase of an EPIC project, we have some more funding. And we hope to integrate that print head into a Brailler and start making Braille and getting feedback from the blind community and the maintenance and repair guys to find, okay, is this quality Braille? Okay, so if this works, now we can looking at relaxing some of the tolerance on the rest of the machine and having a whole design, mm-hmm. So that's basically
Good. You referred to EPIC a couple of times, so I just want to tell our listeners what EPIC is.
Sure.
And that is EPIC is short for Externally Collaborative Project-Based Interdisciplinary Culture for Learning. It's a program at Wentworth that brings together students, faculty members, and external constituencies, mainly businesses, and helps the businesses get something in the process by working with students and faculty, and the students are afforded an opportunity through these EPIC projects to get real hands-on experience in their fields. So, John, if you would tell us a little bit about the brailer itself. Now, it's made its manufacturing debut 67 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I'm told it's changed very, very little since then.
Yeah.
So, what are you looking at when you're working on this type of machine? And I know that you've described it as trying to tune a piano, if mm-hmm. you will. That it's not an easy machine to work with. There are something like how many parts?
700.
700 yeah. parts in a machine that's essentially the size of a bread box.
Yeah.
Or a typewriter, although it looks nothing like a typewriter that most people think of.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's extremely important to blind people in the United States and abroad. People still cling to these machines. They're very important to them. They're very reliable,
mm-hmm.
and blind people use them all the time, even though they do have access to technology and software and such things.
Mm-hmm.
This is still the premier mm-hmm. apparatus that they use in their
yes.
daily lives for writing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you're trying to do, I know you've told us before, is to somehow try and lower the cost
yes.
of each
yes.
of these machines. Can you talk about that a little bit and why that's so important?
Oh, sure. Yeah, as to the, I'll address the cost issue first. The main driver there is in third world countries, they can't afford the $700 cost, a price of the machine. So if they can reduce the costs by nominally half, then there's a strong demand in third world countries. So, for example, right now they manufacture and sell about 10,000 brailers per year, which is a significant number, but they could easily manufacture closer to 100,000 if it was half the cost, because unfortunately there's a strong demand for a lot of blind people in the world. Right now, in a lot of third world countries, they still use this old slate tablet just to make marks in Braille, mm. so it's very tedious and time-consuming. So we're looking at if we can make the Brailler more, simplify the design a lot, and even taking out some of the features that wouldn't be necessary, like, it's, for example, an automatic paper feed option that the classic Brailler has. That wouldn't be necessary in a third world country, so we can take out some features and simplify the design. And furthermore, if we can simplify it enough that it can be assembled in any countries, then you could possibly just ship parts to a country and have people assembling them in the country. Right now, it's it requires a lot of training to know how to assemble and tune a Perkins Brailler, so it's mostly done in India, and some people in the States that can do it. But if there's people that can do it, say, in Peru or whatever country you want to get into, it simplifies the supply chain so that you're just shipping parts into a country. They don't get taxed as much as a fully assembled product. So there's a lot of things that go into just looking at the cost.
You've also been talking about, I know, the potential, again, this is mm-hmm. probably longer-term
yeah.
goal, to maybe make this a little bit more portable. Maybe
yes.
maybe there's a design aspect to make it so that it could fit into a backpack. Or
yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know the actual weight, but it's probably ballpark 10 pounds.
So it's pretty heavy.
It's pretty heavy and not super easy to just put in a backpack. You can put it in your backpack, but it's definitely cumbersome. So if we can, that's one option we're looking at down the road, is a way to, make it more portable, carryable. But on the other hand, we don't want to make it so light that the end user doesn't like it, because there have been some Brailers that people have made that are just too light, and ergonomically, the people using them don't like them. So, so we are looking at ways that that we could make the design collapsible, or just even though. So, in other words, the weight isn't the main issue. It's more the size that could fold down into to make it more portable.
When you've talked about the original design, you say the original design is pretty good. I mean, it's lasted all these years. So you're trying to, at the same time, you've talked about maintaining that inherent quality so that these machines can hold up. And they do take a lot of use. I mean, they do have to hold up. So that's, I know, an important factor you've talked about as well. Tell us, John, if you would, about the experience that the Wentworth students are getting in this EPIC project, and why that's so important to them. I've spoken to a couple who've said that, you know, they're getting a lot of great experience, and they're seeing, you know, firsthand how their work might help, you know, potentially, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who use Brailers across the world. So, from your perspective, what's the student experience here?
Okay, that's a good question. Away? Yeah, because at first hand, some working on a design of a purely mechanical product may seem kind of simple and not exciting, but as the students get into it, they see that all of the courses, all the knowledge they're learning, is applicable to even a mechanical machine like that, and a lot of things we take for granted. For example, in the Braille design, we're looking at the stiffness of the parts, so that the students learn in courses that mechanical things can be modeled as springs. Everything that you touch in the physical world has a stiffness to it, that for a certain amount of force, it's going to deflect a certain amount. And so they're getting real firsthand knowledge on that using the Brailler. So we've developed mathematical models of exactly how much force is coming down on each pin. That was something that wasn't even easy to find, for example, in looking up, I had them do research to find out how much force does it take to make a Braille dot in a certain size paper. We couldn't find that, so one student developed a tabletop mechanism with a so-called load cell that measures force to determine how much force it takes to make a Braille dot. And initially, he was starting to get data telling me it took 15 newtons, which is approximately, it's a little more than 3 pounds, maybe, yeah, little 3.5 pounds of force. And I told him, well, that doesn't sound right. I don't think it takes, and I'm the professor, I was like, that sounds higher than it should be. Why don't you check your data? And then he checked it, and I went over there myself and witnessed it. And sure enough, it was taking 3.5 pounds of force to perforate the paper, which was significantly higher than I thought it would be. So without that knowledge, you need to have that fundamental knowledge of what you're dealing with, because at the end of the day, Braille is all about you're making dots and paper. If you don't have the knowledge of what the requirements are, it's hard to design something. So that's one example of the type of basic research you could do, even on something that seems not as exciting, if you will. Because I think students nowadays tend to think of, not to say electronic things and computerized things aren't exciting, they're interesting, but mechanical things take a lot of, you can apply a lot of the theoretical knowledge you learn in school even to purely mechanical things. Mm-hmm. And I'm biased. I like mechanical things. I admit it. So I still like windows that you can crank up in your car as opposed to electrical ones. I think they're more reliable, but I admit I'm biased.
So the students that are really, they're learning a sort of basic, you know, that they have that basic technical, you know, knowledge that they need to acquire, which they otherwise might not think of, as you're saying. They might just, you know, go on to something that's a few steps above that basic working, you know, technology that's involved there. How many students from Wentworth have been involved so far in working with the Perkins School on the Braille Writer?
I'd say about 5 or 6 that have been, as far as that have gone over there to spend time or work on a project. But then more secondarily, indirectly, the freshman teams, there were eight freshman teams that first year of teams of three or four students that
came up. And that was, what, 2015?
That was in 2015, 2016, right. Working on ideas. So, yeah, there's been, I'd say, 20 to 25 students that have had some interaction with it.
So now the good news is that you've just recently been awarded another EPIC grant, mm-hmm. for the spring grants that were just announced.
Yeah.
So that gives you more seed money, if you will, to continue the project.
Yes.
But you also tell me that you're interested in finding other students at this point, and you're looking to continue the project. So how is that going to work?
Yeah. Yeah, good question. So we just recently received new funding for the project, so we are looking for co-op students that could spend time over there. It'd be a combination of spending some time at Perkins and here working with me. So that could start as early as this summer and going into the fall. And then I'm working with Perkins as well to see how they can help leverage those funds and with their own funding.
So there might be more funding.
Yeah.
Certainly uh-huh. There's always a need for more funding. Mm-hmm. Talk about, John, the eligibility. You know, what kind of students are you looking for? Mm-hmm. Who's eligible? And also, how do they go about, you know, contacting you? Or how does that work in terms of trying to arrange a co-op? And this is, mm-hmm. we have to say, this is great experience for students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not only in their fields while they're studying here at Wentworth, but experience that they can apply to potentially careers and also to their resumes as well. Mm-hmm. So this is something that's a real good opportunity for students. Mm-hmm. And I just want to learn a little more about how they could go about it if someone's interested.
Okay. Yeah, they could definitely just contact me at my email address, which is vocoj@wit.edu. So as far as the eligibility, right now, we're primarily looking for mechanical engineers because that's the primary task in working with the Brailler. But also industrial design is of interest. And Professor Williamson in the Industrial Design Department has been working as a consultant on the project. And especially this next year where we're going to start integrating and looking at ways to make it more manufacturable, we'll definitely need his expertise on exactly how we turn a functioning. For example, we're implementing a brake cable to simplify the mechanism between the key punch and the pin. We've made a rough prototype, but Professor Williamson has a lot of skills in figuring out how to make that more robust and what actual parts and connectors we should be using. So I'd say mechanical engineer and or industrial design. On top of that, they are looking, if I mentioned this before, they're looking for a full-time engineer so for their group over there. So they're looking at one of our students now, so it's a possible lead to full-time employment.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And this is working through Dan Roy over at the Perkins School.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, that's good. And thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to Professor John Vocio of the Department of Mechanical Engineering and Technology at Wentworth Institute of Technology. And stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next time.